Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. A special episode here, as I'm joined by WXIA-TV reporter Shanu Herr in Atlanta, as we try to stop Asian hate together. Shanu is Hmong American and has been covering last week's mass shooting for 11 Alive.
Yeah, it's the last 7 to 10 days, they've been really busy. Obviously with being here in Atlanta and covering the spa shootings, which of course have opened this conversation into AAPI communities and how it's affected the communities. I mean, it's been busy. Being Asian American myself and living in Atlanta, I think I've sort of taken it upon myself to really try to be not only very sensitive when it comes to covering what happened, but also allowing myself to be a resource for my colleagues in my newsroom and giving them sort of that insight if they need it. Because, I've been a big advocate my whole career for more Asian American representation in journalism. And I think, right now is a really crucial time to really see the importance of having that.
How has it been the last year plus during the pandemic as the hate crimes against Asian Americans in the United States go up? How has it been as a reporter covering a lot of those crimes? And of course, none more violent than the shooting last week in Atlanta. But as a human, an Asian American man, like, forget that you're a reporter.
Yeah, it's been emotionally, it's been at times exhausting. As a journalist, I think I realize that even though it is exhausting, there are stories out there that really need to be told. And I think this kind of goes hand in hand with, what I was saying about how there needs to be more Asian American representation in journalism and in news media, because, it is a lot for one person or two people in an organization to sort of shoulder the burden of telling, not burden, but shoulder the weight of telling all of those stories. Because if you think about it, within the Asian American community, it is diverse in itself. And so I understand the context and the nuance of like our culture overall, but within the Asian American community, there's still a lot of different ethnicities, different languages spoken. And so over the last year, talking with other Asian American journalist friends that I have, who I'm really close to, my friends who are in the Asian American Journalist Association, there are things that we sort of have to connect on our own time to sort of just talk through, whether it's moral support or asking each other like, hey, how did you navigate certain situations? I do consider myself fortunate in that I work in a newsroom where I think my management have been very supportive, and they check in with me fairly often just to see how I'm doing, if there are resources that I need. And I am very, very grateful and lucky in that regard. But unfortunately, not every Asian American journalist has that sort of backing. So,
and you talk about the Asian American culture. It's not one to really put forward the idea of mental health, the idea of self-care. How do you make sure that you take care of yourself?
Yeah, it's good that you bring that up, because I that is another part of me being a big advocate for Asian Americans in media, is that I'm fairly open about the fact that a couple years ago I decided seeing a therapist was really important for me, especially being in this job. And growing up Hmong and growing up in Asian American communities, we don't necessarily address mental health. And so it was really important for me to sort of come to the realization that could be beneficial for me. So I started seeing a therapist, and it was really important for me to see a therapist who understood sort of the cultural background that I came from. And so, I encouraged, many of my Asian American colleagues and my peers, even outside of journalism, that, if you feel That you need sort of this mental and emotional support, like seek therapy, and it's paid off for me in a big way. And so that's a conversation that I'm open to having with anyone who's in the AAPI community who has thought about it.
What was the conversation like with your family as you go to a therapist, and did you tell them, and how was that conversation?
Yeah, well, I'm very fortunate in that, like, I think my siblings are very understanding of that. And so when I talked to them, I mean, they were more than supportive. I think my parents were a little bit more, they had more questions, but I think they understand that in my line of work, you know, I've seen fairly traumatic things that sometimes, you know, I think sometimes being a journalist, we encounter these things and we, after you cover the story, you kind of move on, you know, and you don't really think about it. So I think once I started going to therapy, I sort of realized that there were things that I needed to talk through. And I think once I kind of made that connection for my parents, I think they were a lot more, they came to a realization that it was actually very healthy for me. So, you know, I just turned 30 in November, and I've covered multiple mass shootings. I've talked to families of victims of very like horrible crimes. And, you know, it's early on in my career, I always told myself that if I get to a point where I can be emotionally disconnected from things like this, then I think it's just kind of time for me to leave the business. And when I started approaching stories where I can walk away from it and not sort of have this emotional, this human conscious to like connect with it, that's when I was like, I think I need to see a therapist. And I did. And I think it's really helped. So
if we go back to that day specifically, the day of the shootings, were you first on scene?
Well, the thing about that day was I actually wasn't feeling good that day. So I didn't go to work. So when it broke, it just came in first as a shooting. And so then we got another alert that there was another shooting. So the first one happened in Cherokee County. So about 30 minutes outside of Atlanta. And then the second one happened, and it was in Midtown. And it's not too far from where our station is. And so when it came in, I was at home, but I was keeping an eye on it. You know, as we found out more details, I just hopped on my computer and I started trying to gather as much information as I could and trying to just help my station and the team working that night to kind of connect them to the right resources and people and trying to help gather information. So my colleague, John, who was on scene, did an amazing job of like gathering information and like getting in touch with people on scene. I mean, he did a fantastic job, but my role was, I was just at home and just kind of helping connect them to the right resources. Cause I knew once it hit home for the Asian American community, I, you know, have been working with the community here. And so I just tried to help connect them with the right people to get the right perspectives and information. And again, hitting the ground on that first day with making sure that we had the right cultural context to everything, because it is a very nuanced situation. So
when you did start covering the story and fronting the story, what were those first stories like for you?
Yeah. So I started, the first day I started covering stories for it was Wednesday. So the day after, and you know, I came in approaching it in the mindset that I'm making myself open and available to covering whatever angle the best suited the team. Because I know like when it comes to sort of like the nuts and bolts of information, I was okay with leaving that to my more than capable colleagues. But, you know, when it came to more like in-depth, trying to convey more of how the Asian American community is feeling, I was okay taking on that because I had been in touch with people in the community who had very deep and strong and complex feelings about what happened. And, you know, if they were more comfortable talking to me as an Asian American that lived in Atlanta, who can really understand sort of some of the unspoken sadness and fear and frustration, I was okay being that. And so that first day, I mean, that was really my story, was just, you know, how are you feeling today?
And I feel like if we go back in journalism, even as recently as maybe 10 or 15 years, but certainly way back when, you would get the idea that, okay, newsrooms would send the, quote, the Asian reporter to cover the Asian stories. And I feel like there was a pendulum swing away from that so that they wouldn't get pigeonholed, wouldn't get stereotyped, and you know, they could cover more stories. But now I feel like the pendulum has swung back to the side of, I would like to cover this story because I am connected to this story. I'm not just a robot reporter.
Right. That's a good point. I mean, I was just on a panel with the Atlanta Press Club, and we were talking. The panel was all Asian American journalists who've been covering this Fox shooting, and also a state rep from Georgia who's Asian American. And we were talking about this. And I think one of the big questions that came up during this was, can Asian American reporters cover this tragedy and remain unbiased? And I think, although I see why the question is asked, I also don't see a whole lot of validity to it, because I think when I think about myself covering this story, if anything, I put a lot of care and thought into covering the story because I can relate and connect to the community. And because there's a sense of community when covering this story, and I want to do this story right, and I want to do this story with a lot of care. And so I think if anything, it actually ups the coverage and the quality of the coverage. Because I mean, if you think that an Asian American journalist covering the story presents a bias, then what is the default? We don't make that question if it's a white reporter covering a story with, right, and the victims are white, right? So why does that question come up now? But I think the Asian American journalists that I've seen cover this story, I think they've done it with a lot of care. They've done it with a lot of compassion, and they've done it with a lot of accuracy.
Did your family call you after the shootings, knowing that you're either nearby or perhaps covering the story as you ended up covering the story? What were those conversations like with your family?
Yeah, I mean, I have three sisters and a brother. So I come from a big family. And, you know, I think with this story, having a lot of focus on not just Asian Americans, but Asian American women, when I had a little bit of downtime, I think I thought a lot of my own family. And so I talked to my sisters a lot over the past week. I talk to them every day, but I think over the past week, you know, and especially last week,
The tone of the conversation, I would imagine,
it was
changed.
Just different. Yeah, it was different. And I talked to each of them separately, but I think they all kind of echoed the same thing. And the one thing that they all said was like, it's really scary. And keep in mind, they live in Minneapolis. They don't live in Atlanta. So, you know, when to hear them say it's scary and they don't live here and they're asking me how I'm doing, I think that really struck me to like a different level, because, you know, I've been in the business for a while now, and every time I cover something really major, they always check in on me to make sure I'm okay. But I think they've always checked in on me to also like let me know that they're there if I need anything. But with this one, I mean, it was different because they called to check in on me, but they also were scared for themselves. And so the conversations were deep. I mean, the tone was different. The conversations were deep. And, you know, when I talk to my mom, I just have to tell her, like, you know, be careful if you go out, or, you know, if you're going to go out, like, don't go alone. And, you know, so it really hit home.
You've brought up Minneapolis and Minnesota a couple of times. You grew up there to Hmong refugees. We talked just briefly before we started recording about the idea that most Americans really don't know about the Hmong population in the United States, about 250,000. I worked in Fresno for a few years, and prior to moving to Fresno, I'd never even heard about the Hmong. But Minnesota, one of the highest populations, Fresno and California in general,
yes,
the highest population. So talk to me just about growing up in that culture, because in Minnesota, I would imagine you get a lot of questions where it's like, Asian Americans and in general get this question, where are you from? I'm guilty of asking that when I was younger. Where are you from? It's like, what do you mean where I'm from? I'm from Minneapolis. I live down the street. You know, I was born here, grew up here. What do you mean where I'm from? Oh, okay. What's my culture? Well, let me tell you. So tell me about growing up in Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean, growing up in the Twin Cities, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, I mean, I think we have such a big community that, like, when I'm around other Hmong people, you know, obviously very comfortable, and, you know, we understand everything that we're going, that we're going through. But then, yeah, you know, you meet people who don't know who we are. And, you know, you sort of have to explain that. But I think over the years, I mean, I think our community, has, done very well for itself. You know, we have politicians, business owners, doctors, people in news media. So we've done well for ourselves over the past couple of years. But I think, yeah, growing up there, I mean, my parents' generation, they were very, very hardworking, kind of, you know, buckle down, head down, work hard, and don't make a whole lot of noise. And so, you know, for me, for my generation growing up, we still had to really advocate for, like, our space. And we had to really still educate people on who we are. And I think we've done a lot of good groundwork with that, to where the communities where we are very prominent, such as, you know, like you said, Fresno and, like, Sacramento. I have a lot of family in Sacramento, the Twin Cities. I think people know who we are now. But growing up there, yeah, we still had to do a lot of education and explain who we are to classmates or neighbors. Yeah.
If somebody's listening to this podcast with a fine tooth comb and they want to take notes and things, that was probably my longest question to you, because I still get nervous when asking questions, like, just uncomfortable questions to me, because I don't want to say the wrong thing. Yeah, put my foot in my mouth or this or that.
Yeah.
But I love that we can have conversations like this, because 5 or 10 or 15 years ago, I don't know that we would have or could have.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where I think when, and not speaking for everyone, because, like, one thing I always say to people is I'm not the gatekeeper to all things Asian. So I'm open to taking questions, but I'm not the gatekeeper. So, but speaking for myself, I mean, I think, I've lived all over the country and in places where there's not a whole lot of Asian Americans living there. So I'm always open to questions. I think, you know, I never fault someone for asking questions with the intention of learning. Now, if it's coated with ignorance, that's a different story. But I think more than anything, I've had a lot of people ask just out of pure curiosity or because they want to learn. And I never have a problem with that. I'm always open to having those conversations. So, you know, if people are listening and they want to know, you know, ask with good intentions and with a good heart, because I think more often than not, you find that, you know, people are okay with having those conversations.
The hashtag Stop Asian Hate has been around for months and months, but really, of course, since the Atlanta shootings has taken off, just exploded. What can I do or other allies do to help?
I think, you know, I think right now it's just having, I mean, I think a big part of it is just literally having the conversation with other allies or, you know, to talk about why this is such a problem. And to just keep talking about advocating for change and do it, you know. I think, like you said, I mean, I think for so long, the conversation has been uncomfortable. And I think now that we're actually physically seeing some of the crimes, it's kind of forced us to have the conversation. But I think, you know, actually having that conversation and having those talks with people and sort of pushing each other into a realm of uncomfortability can lead to more change. And that's why, like I said, I don't have a problem having uncomfortable conversations if I know people have a good heart when they are having those talks.
I look at it like this, like there are a lot of people who are willing to go to the gym, put themselves through so much pain with the idea of no pain, no gain, and yet they won't have uncomfortable conversations to learn from and grow from.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I think it, words have such power and can create change. And I think until we can address the issue, you know, it'll be hard for change to come, because if you don't confront it head on, I think it's hard to talk about what the solution is going to be. And, you know, like I said, I think Asian Americans out there are, they want to have the conversation, and they will have the conversation, but, you know, just as allies, like, just do it with good intention and with the mindset of learning and helping. And, you know, I think people will have that conversation with you.
We'll have you back on the podcast. We can talk more about your life, more about your journey, how you got to Atlanta. I cannot wait to see where you go and where you take this.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And thanks for having me on.
So looking forward to having Shanu back on the podcast. He's at Shanu Her on social media. That's C-H-E-N-U-E-H-E-R. I'll put all his links in the show notes. You can find me at AaronBender.com. Would appreciate it if you subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, share. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, AaronBenderMedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.